Welcome to the Deep Dive. You're here because you want to cut through the dense legal jargon and really understand the core principles behind important cases. Today, we're doing just that with United States v. Samboy.
Right, a 2005 First Circuit case. It's interesting because it hits on two really key areas, the Fourth Amendment and warrantless searches, and also sentencing challenges after the big Booker decision.
Exactly. So our goal today is to kind of unpack it all, figure out when a warrantless home entry might actually be okay, legally speaking, and what happens when someone challenges a sentence under guidelines that are now just, well, advisory.
Yeah, it really gets into that tension, doesn't it? Law enforcement needing to act versus, you know, the fundamental right to privacy in your own home. Plus, we see how courts grapple with applying major Supreme Court rulings like Booker.
Okay, so let's dive into the specifics. What actually happened? Give us the rundown on Samboy and how this case even got started.
All right. So, Alcinio Samboy was convicted on federal drug charges, conspiracy and possession with intent to distribute cocaine base, specifically crack. The whole thing kicked off with a confidential informant setting up a controlled buy.
A classic setup.
Pretty much. Samboy sent a courier, a guy named De Los Santos, to make the delivery. The police arrested De Los Santos right after the transaction. And here's the kicker. De Los Santos didn't just have the drugs on him. He also had keys to Samboy's apartment building.
Ah, okay. So the police now have the courier, the drugs, and a way into Samboy's building. What did they do next? Did they just barge in?
Not right away. They went to Samboy's apartment, knocked loudly, announced they were police. But crickets, no answer. So then they decided to go in without a warrant.
And their reason?
Exigent circumstances. They argued that, look, De Los Santos is caught. Samboy probably knows the deal went bad. And he could be inside right now destroying the drug evidence. You know, flushing it, whatever.
Makes sense from their perspective. So they go in. What happens then?
They did what's called a protective sweep first. Basically a quick look around to make sure no one's hiding, posing a threat. During that initial sweep, even before they got a full warrant later, they saw drugs and cash just out in the open.
Right. And Samboy obviously wasn't thrilled about this. What was his legal move?
Predictably, his lawyers filed a motion to suppress all that evidence found during the warrantless entry. They argued it violated his Fourth Amendment rights, unreasonable search and seizure the whole nine yards.
But the trial court didn't buy it.
Nope. The trial court denied the motion. That evidence came in, Samboy was convicted, and he ended up with a pretty hefty sentence, 2 concurrent 175-month prison terms.
Wow, nearly 15 years. Okay, so the appeal really focuses on two big things, that warrantless search and the sentence itself. Let's break down the search first. Generally, police need a warrant for a house, right?
Absolutely. That's like Fourth Amendment 101. Warrantless searches inside someone's home are presumptively unreasonable. The Supreme Court has said time and again, your home is your castle. The bar is set really high for police to enter without a warrant signed by a judge.
But there are exceptions, and the one they used here was exigent circumstances. Can you unpack that a bit more? What does it actually mean legally?
Sure. Exigent circumstances basically means there's an urgent situation, a compelling need for immediate action where waiting to get a warrant would cause, you know, bad things to happen, like evidence being destroyed, which was the argument here. Or maybe someone's in danger inside or a suspect is about to escape.
So it's for emergencies, essentially.
Exactly. But it's a narrow exception. The government has to prove those circumstances really existed. They can't just say, oh, we thought maybe.
So what specific facts did the First Circuit look at in Samboy to say, okay, yeah, exigent circumstances applied here?
Well, they pointed to a few things. First, probable cause was pretty solid, right? They had the controlled buy, the courier caught red-handed with drugs and the keys. It wasn't just a random guess. It pointed strongly to Samboy and his apartment.
Okay, probable cause established. What else?
Second, the nature of the evidence itself. Drugs, especially cocaine base, it's easily disposable. Flush it down the toilet, down the drain, gone. So the risk of destruction was very real and very immediate if Samboy suspected something was up.
And the lack of response at the door?
That was the third piece, yeah. When the police knocked and announced themselves and got silence, the court saw that, combined with De Los Santos's arrest, as suggesting Samboy might know the jig was up and could be actively destroying evidence right then.
So it's a combination of factors, not just one thing.
Definitely. And the court emphasized this wasn't just a hunch. Police need specific, articulable facts. They can't just say drugs might be destroyed. Here, they had the sequence. Informant, controlled by, courier arrest with keys, then the knock and no answer.
The timing seems important, too. They didn't just rush in based on the informant.
Right. They waited for corroboration, for the probable cause to really solidify with the arrest. Then, when the risk seemed immediate because of the potential alert, they acted quickly. And it's also key that the initial entry was just that protective sweep. They secured the place, then got a proper warrant for the full search later. That procedural step matters.
Okay, got it. Now, Sam Boy had another Fourth Amendment argument, didn't he? Something about his expectation of privacy in the specific apartment.
He did. He argued about the search of the third floor apartment specifically. See, to even make a Fourth Amendment claim, you have to show you had a reasonable expectation of privacy in the place searched.
And how does that work? What's the test?
It's a two-part test, basically. First, did you, the person, actually expect privacy there? Like, did you treat it as your private space? That's the subjective part. Second, is that expectation something society considers reasonable? Like, you expect privacy in your bedroom, but maybe not in, say, an open field you don't own?
So how did Sam Boy try to meet that test for the third floor apartment?
He basically just claimed it was his residence, but the court said, hold on, you didn't actually prove that. He didn't provide enough evidence showing it was his primary home, that he lived there regularly, controlled access, that sort of thing.
So just saying it's mine isn't enough?
Not nearly enough. You need facts to back it up. Because he couldn't show that strong connection, the court essentially said society wouldn't recognize his privacy claim for that specific apartment under those circumstances. So his Fourth Amendment rights weren't even violated by that particular search because he didn't establish the necessary privacy interest in the first place.
Interesting. So no recognized expectation of privacy, no Fourth Amendment claim for that spot. Okay, let's pivot to the sentence. 175 months. He challenged that based on the Booker decision, right?
Exactly. When Sam Boy was sentenced, the federal sentencing guidelines were treated as mandatory by the judge. But later, the Supreme Court decided United States v. Booker, which famously made the guidelines advisory, not mandatory.
So Sam Boy argued his mandatory sentence was now unconstitutional.
Pretty much. But there was a procedural hurdle. His lawyers hadn't raised that specific Booker-style objection at the original sentencing because, well, Booker hadn't been decided yet. So the appeals court had to review his claim under a tougher standard. Plain error.
Plain error. Okay, what does that involve? Sounds like more than just pointing out a mistake.
Oh, it is. It's a specific four-part test, often called the Alano test. To win on plain error, Sam Boy had to show, one, there was an error, two, the error was plain or obvious, usually meaning obvious now at the time of appeal, three, the error affected his substantial rights, and four, the error seriously undermined the fairness or integrity of the whole process.
That sounds like a high bar to clear.
It is, especially that third prong, affecting substantial rights.
So how did Sam Boy do against that test? Did the court find plain error?
Well, they found the first two parts easily. Yes, treating the guidelines as mandatory was an error after Booker. And yes, that error was plain by the time the appeal was heard, but...
But he failed on prong three, affecting substantial rights.
Exactly. To meet that, he had to show a reasonable probability that the judge would have given him a lighter sentence if the judge had known the guidelines were only advisory. And Sam Boy just couldn't convince the appellate court of that probability.
So even though the judge applied the wrong standard, mandatory versus advisory, Sam Boy couldn't show it likely made a difference to his actual prison time.
Correct. He couldn't point to specific factors or statements by the judge suggesting a lower sentence was likely under an advisory system. Without showing that prejudice that the error likely caused a longer sentence, his plain error claim failed. The sentence stood.
Wow. So that really shows how tough plain error review is, especially post-Booker. You can't just say Booker happened. You have to show it probably would have changed your outcome.
Precisely. No demonstrated prejudice, no relief, even if the error itself is clear.
Okay, let's boil this down. What are the big takeaways for law students listening to this from Sam Boy?
I'd say three main things. First, exigent circumstances for warrantless entry. Super fact dependent. You need a reasonable belief backed by concrete facts of an imminent threat, like evidence destruction. It's not a magic wand for police.
Right. Specifics matter.
Second, that reasonable expectation of privacy is foundational for any Fourth Amendment challenge. You can't just assert it. You got to prove it subjectively and objectively based on societal norms. Where was searched? What was your connection to it? Crucial questions.
And the third takeaway.
Plain error is hard, especially in the sentencing context after Booker. Showing an error happened isn't enough. You must demonstrate a reasonable probability that the error actually affected your substantial rights, meaning it likely led to a worse outcome, like a longer sentence. Proving prejudice is key.
Those are really practical points. You can see how they come up in exams or even practice.
Definitely. These aren't just abstract doctrines. They have real-world consequences.
So quick recap. Samboy upheld the warrantless entry based on specific facts showing exigent circumstances, risk of evidence destruction. And the sentencing challenge failed on plain error because Samboy couldn't show the Booker error likely changed his sentence length.
You got it. A great case illustrating that balance between rights and enforcement and the procedural hurdles on appeal.
Absolutely. It's been a really good deep dive and leaves us with a thought provoker for everyone listening. The court focused heavily on the facts, justifying the police belief that Samboy might destroy evidence. What specific additional fact may be something about what Samboy was actually doing inside the apartment right before the police entered, if known, could have seriously weakened that exigent circumstances argument? What action or maybe inaction could have tipped the scales the other way?
That's a good one. Makes you think about how just one different detail could potentially change the whole legal analysis, right?
It really does. We hope you'll keep thinking about the Fourth Amendment's reach, especially as technology changes how police work. Understanding cases like Samboy gives you that solid grounding in principles you'll use throughout your legal career. Thanks for joining us for this deep dive.